Welcome, everybody, to episode number 5 of the second season of The Lonely TARDIS, your guide through Time Lords and space. I'm Dolly Domovsky. Joining me, as usual, is Sean Norton.
Hello.
Who is obviously just as enthusiastic as I am.
Well, I was just thinking, I give you a lot of credit for having such an enthusiastic, you know, positive intro to the show. I'm feeling wrecked, Dolly. I'm not going to lie. This episode took a lot out of me. And of course, we did our absolute best to get this, you know, recorded and up and uploaded as soon as we could, given how serious of a show this was and the big ending and everything. So, you know, usually we have a couple days to process our thoughts and to kind of get everything together. But this is fresh. This is a wound that Moffat and friends opened up last night. And we're getting this to you guys, you know, with the quickness. Pretty raw thoughts here. For I don't know about you, but for me, only about, 16, 17 hours turnaround time since I saw it.
So. Same with me. I think you and I actually watch it at the same time. I was out at some Oktoberfest events and got home, watched it midnight my time, which is 9 your time. So it's right around the same time we started.
I had to tell quite a few people on the Twitters and all the social medias to just shut up. I literally said, be silent, and I'm sure you caught that. And it was interesting to see.
Oh, yeah.
I wish I thought you were a little bit ahead of me, but we probably could have reacted at the same exact time.
Yep. And apparently you have a TARDIS flying behind you. Was that a train or a truck?
Oh, yeah. You know, even with the windows closed, I record whenever I'm recording at home. It's a little loud in the street.
Sure.
So apologies, everybody, for the Sunday traffic. I told San Francisco to keep it down, but they just don't respect.
Yeah, you'd think the Angels took San Francisco, but...
Perhaps we should note the absence of our colleague.
Yeah, we should. We've been... So Stephen Strum, the Stormageddon, was unable to join us at this moment. He may actually hop in
as of
right now. He may be able to hop in at some point. We don't know. We're going to do our best to plug along without him until hopefully he can show up.
Unfortunately, sometimes scheduling is just hard. Different time zones and different lives and everything.
In his place will be Dalek Bohr. No, I'm just kidding. Dalek Bohr will not be making an appearance. Timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly. I guess let's just hop right into it.
Why don't you bring us up to speed on what we've got going into this and then give us a bit of an episode recap.
Sounds good. I'm just going to give the episode recap, right? I'm gonna give here's the plan for today. We're gonna talk about the Angels Take Manhattan. We're gonna go in kind of with our thoughts, some of the things we loved and hated. We're gonna give our usual review, and then we've got some listener feedback. Finally, got some really good listener feedback. So please, if you've been sending us tweets and emails over the last day, it probably will be read on the episode. If not, sorry, we ran out of time. We're going to try to get as many as we can. We did get quite a few replies, and we're going to try to do this more often.
We appreciate all that, of course, and I'm very excited to see more people interacting with us. And then, of course, we have plans to expand that as well. It was funny, just a little bit of a side note before we go really deep here.
Mm-hmm.
Late last week, I was involved in some back and forth on Twitter, and I got some people into, you know, they had been listening to the show, and I suppose I have a bit of a reputation where I'm a little bit more of, I guess, of the hardliner, or I'm dropping the hammer on, you know, bottles and things that don't hold up, and I had people just tweeting at me just so happy about that. They were just so happy that I was the one like keeping the baseline and for lack of a better term, I think somebody said not allowing any of the bullshit. And of course, I don't go out of my way to do that.
No.
I just, you know, as anybody who's listened to us before, I have a bit of an over analytical brain. So when these plot holes do pop up, and of course it's going to happen on a time travel show, it's just kind of how it goes. So I guess I've done it enough where I'm seen as kind of a, I don't want to say counterbalance, but I guess we've all developed our own, you know, recurring outlooks and personas for the show and for our show. And I thought that was funny as we were going back and forth that they were just so excited about the fact that I was just calling out the nonsense. And on my rant, as those of you who listened to our episode about The Power of Three, my rant that I was a little worried about was so crazy. People loved it. Like, people just really loved the fact that I just called out all of the last 10 minutes of nonsense in that episode. And so, you know, as we solicited feedback for today, one of those guys was, you know, listen, I can't see the episode yet, but –
you know, he says, drop the hammer and kill it. And they're just so excited about this way we approach it.
Yes.
And these are also, I mean, it's proven to be such a divisive show this season, especially, and there are people who are, you know, and I feel like they're going to be opposite to us. They're really happy to see the pawns go, you know, and we'll touch on that in a little bit. But I just think it's funny. I love that Who really brings out these kind of emotional reactions in people that can be so different or so similar to ours, depending on, you know, the episode and how you feel about the characters and stuff. So keep it up, guys. We definitely want to keep hearing all of this awesome feedback. So
yeah, it is pretty interesting. I think, like you said, you've kind of handled the analytical portion or the plot hole police, the PHP, plot hole police.
That's me, yeah.
Steven has got a really great sense of the history and the knowledge and the background of all the characters. He's really always excited to talk about it. And I'm kind of like the voice of Reddit almost. I'm the conspiracy theorist where everything has a link and everything has a meaning. So I think we have a pretty good...
Yeah. We do this out of love, people.
Exactly. We have a really great triforce of Doctor Who wisdom going on here.
I tear down because I want to see built up. So anyway, right. I'm sorry to interrupt, but please go ahead and give us the recap of this game-changing episode. This end of an era, I guess you could say, right?
So everybody knew going into the season that this episode, episode 5, was going to be the end of the Pond era, right? We didn't know to what extent, but as we found out during the episode yesterday, a pretty important extent. So the plot kind of opens up. It's set in New York City. It's set with kind of the backdrop of the Angels have, obviously we all know about the Angels. They've made an appearance. It's set, I think it was in the 30s, sometime in a kind of noir style
30s. I think it was 1938.
Yeah. pre-World War II. It's being narrated by, or not even narrated, it kind of switches narration back and forth, but it centers on this detective, Garner, who's been contacted by Mr. Grail. Interesting name, Grail, Gray, Gargoyle. I think there's a few words, angel statues. So Mr. Grail has been infatuated with the Angels, and he's been asking Mr. Garner to help kind of investigate them. So he sends Garner to a building, an apartment, to investigate, and Garner finds an older version of himself there who is actually... he was sent back in time and kind of confined to the apartment to die. after that kind of portion, we see Dr. Amy and Rory hanging out in a picnic in Central Park, kind of modern-day New York. They're reading a 1930s detective novel by, was it Melody? I can't remember the last name. But... written in the 1930s, and it seemed like everything they were reading was dictating what they were to do, right? So essentially it was somebody speaking to them about what was going to happen next, so they made sure not to read ahead. The doctor actually ripped the last page out, put it in his pocket to save it for later. They come to find out that Rory was abducted by the Angels, sent back to the 1930s. So then they end up, initially they weren't able to get to the 1930s because of timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly stuff, but they managed to get back there where they bump into River Song, and they all kind of converge initially at Mr. Grail's abode, where he actually has an angel captive. The funny joke was that they kept calling it his girlfriend. So that's kind of funny. From that point, they track down Rory, who's at the apartment, trapped in the room. They're trying to find out how to get him out of there. He actually sees an older version of himself who dies in the room when he sees Amy, the younger Amy. They decide, all right, we have to somehow mess up time here. We have to change things in order to. Kind of break the angel's spell or the angel's
intent.
Create a paradox. So Rory hops up on the ledge at the top of this building, is about to jump off the building to try to kill himself, thinking, you know, if I die, then the angels can't have me, which means it's going to create that paradox. This whole building will disappear. We'll be back in modern-day New York. Everything will be good. Amy says, you're not doing this without me. We're married. This is what marriage is all about. She gets on there, and they both leap off the building. Doctor and River just make it to the very top as Amy and Rory leap off. Tears all over the place, and all of a sudden, the paradox occurs, and they're back in modern-day New York. It worked. Fantastic. Awesome. They land somehow in a cemetery. They don't know why. They all decide to board back on the TARDIS and go on their merry way and go on adventures when Rory notices that one of the tombstones in the cemetery has a name very similar to his, and then realizes that, wait a minute, it is his tombstone. Turns around. There's an angel pointing at him, sends him back to the 30s or wherever, and he kind of passes away. And so Amy decides that she's not going to go through life without Rory. The angel's still there. She tells the doctor, thank you for everything. You've got to continue on your way. Turns away from the angel and gets sucked back into the same time frame as Rory. The tombstone then changes. The heading on the tombstone changes just from Rory's name to Rory and his loving wife, Amy. And that's it. The episode kind of ends at that point. There were a few things here and there which we'll get into, but as kind of a brief synopsis, there we go. So, I tried to actually go a little bit quicker this time.
No, it was good. I mean, there was some interesting stuff in there. And the fact that they had to, you know, the TARDIS literally bounced off of 1938 because of all the time distortion energy with all the angels in one place. Mm-hmm. Because they had created this, I don't know if you touched on this, but they had created this sort of, this apartment building which served as like almost like a Matrix-style battery for them, where they were just constantly, it was explained that they would just constantly loop people back in time and then just feed on that over and over and over again until they died. So the TARDIS actually couldn't materialize without help from River, who was there and sent, like, as the doctor called it, landing lights. And we learned that, once again, that the time vortex that River uses can get to places a little bit easier or faster than the TARDIS can, which, you know, I guess makes sense from a sense that you're getting future tech versus a TARDIS. Let's not get into that yet. But so there was that. There was the paradox itself. There was a giant Statue of Liberty angel. Which
amazing
was a thing, definitely a thing there, and then of course there was the ending and just the farewell. Did you catch the farewell and the forward and Amy's final request for the doctor?
Yeah,
which ties all the way back to the thing in season 5, episode 1 that nobody had realized happened, or something, as Moffat put it.
Yeah, I'm listening. Continue.
Oh, I was asking if you caught that.
Oh, briefly. I caught it briefly.
Yeah, well, I mean, I could understand. You were probably all choked up and crying at that point. But basically, Amy's like, listen, don't worry about us, because it's established that the doctor can't get to them. He'll never see them again, which is something we should talk about, because I think that's one of the big, big, big sticking points that a lot of people have with this episode, is a big problem. But anyway, so it's established that the doctor can't get there, and as you mentioned, we see on their tombstone that they're gone, and they both lived until, you know, they were in their 80s, and Amy actually outlives Rory, which, you know, as you would expect.
Yeah.
Unless she was older. I guess we never find out if she was older.
She was older, wasn't she?
But then she, you know, he's like, oh, the last page of the book, and Amy had written a foreword because River said she would tell her to write a foreword. And it's a letter, it's basically a goodbye letter to the doctor. And, you know, it tells him that they lived full lives and that, you know, things were fine and that they, you know, they got to spend it together, which is how it was supposed to be. But he should go back and talk to, you know, young Amy Pond, young Amelia, who's sitting there waiting for him and is going to be crushed when he doesn't show up, and tell her a story, tell her a fairy tale about how she would grow up and this girl would fight, you know, with pirates and we'd see dinosaurs on spaceships and, you know, hang out with Vincent van Gogh and all of this stuff. And I guess he does. I mean, the episode ends with the TARDIS sounding like it's about to materialize again in her backyard, and she gets all excited, and it freezes on this beautiful shot of young Amy Pond. And, you know, I guess we're supposed to infer that he does show, or he always did show up, and he kind of told her this tale to make the wait a little more bearable. since, you know, the next 10 years people were going to tell her she's crazy and she was going to come up with imaginary friends and all this other stuff. So it was a very sweet, very poignant moment at the end that, you know, kind of captured what I feel this episode did really well. And what it's done really well all season is all the character performances, or the actor performances, and the believability of the characters. And
mm-hmm.
and yeah, yeah, I mean, it was powerful stuff at the end. It really was. I mean, even if you don't like the Ponds, you have to admit that the performances by Arthur Darvill and, you know, Karen and Matt Smith were all just so spot on again. And this is the stuff that we've talked about before that really carries Doctor Who this season and, you know, part of the last. When, you know, if the stories may not themselves necessarily hold up, either as window dressing or whatever, just to move the plot along, we can always count on these performances to just make it feel, at least in the moment, you know, make it feel like it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, these are characters that we've spent 2.5 years investing in and you know, watching travel with our Doctor and knowing that their ending was coming didn't make it any less heartbreaking. You know, I mean, I'll straight up admit, I had tears in my eyes. You know, I'm man enough to admit that I'm a softie and that I really, like, they grew on me. I mean, I've always been a fan of Rory, but Amy, I feel like, had this great arc and she really came through in the end. And I know not everybody's going to agree with me, but I feel like she really grew as a character. And to see what happened and to see love is the thing that's powerful enough to break paradoxes and keep the universe spinning. And then to see her jump, you know, like, to just say goodbye and go back when Rory's zapped away it was incredible. And then Matt Smith's reaction to that and just the if you go back and you watch that, you can see when his heart breaks. You can pinpoint the moment that, you know, his heart's break when he begs her to go back in the TARDIS. Like, he was basically sitting there and saying, don't, you know, like, we'll figure something out, when of course, you know, he couldn't.
Yeah.
But just come back, don't, you know. And it was almost selfish. It was, well, not even almost, it was selfish. It was the Doctor saying, Rory, whatever, please don't leave me, come back with me. Oh, man.
Gets you choked up, man. It's
it really does. It really does. I mean, and there were so many examples of that. I mean, you know, we've had this foreshadowing all season, you know, and I stand by my belief that the episodes, as we talked about previously, the episodes are out of order. And I stand by my belief that he's so heartbroken by what happens in this episode that he's gone to visit them.
So I think that this episode is actually the first of this season. Chronologically for the Doctor, this is the first, and it goes back to earlier in Amy and Rory's life. Or, you know, it kind of goes back to their chronology. So we're witnessing their chronology all throughout this season.
I mean, it's tough to – I think, and I could just, you know, maybe smarter people than me can figure this out. I think it's tough to pinpoint exactly when each episode is because you had the marriage and divorce, which was in Pond Life. But then maybe Pond Life wasn't directly in front of – but, well, I mean, it comes directly in front of Asylum of the Dark, but we don't know when. I feel like this has to – I don't know if I agree that it comes first chronologically. Maybe from the Doctor's point of view.
I think that's what I'm saying. From the Doctor's point of view, it comes in first chronologically. From Amy and Rory's, I think this comes in, you know, towards the end. It's the end.
Well,
of their life.
Right, because you have the modeling stuff and the divorce stuff.
Right, and I think this is almost like to me this, and we'll get into the whole season next week. I don't want to get into too much, but I think they brought in River Song for a reason this season. That was not great. For a reason, this episode...
it's okay to rhyme. Like to rhyme sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. The emotion brings out the mad skills in me sometimes.
Oh, you're a poet, Dolly. It's okay.
You know, they brought in River Song because obviously her and the Doctor have been crossing paths time-wise, right? The Doctor first meets her at the very end of her life. And so it's almost kind of similar to that this season, and I think it's really exemplified in this episode. Amy and Rory, this whole season is kind of going in reverse from the Doctor's standpoint, from Amy and Rory's standpoint. So, it kind of has that feeling, and we'll get into that next week when we talk more about the entire season. But
I'd like to come back to River at some point when we start talking about. I don't know if you have, you know, faults with the episode, but I definitely there's some things that stick.
Well,
out
let's
to me. Let's
get
continue.
In. You know, I'd say let's get into the things we liked about the episodes
and what we
hated. So, I'm kind of taking that River Song aspect and seeing and kind of jumping off of there, because I thought she her character in this episode, that Melody Malone is who the author was of the book. And by the way, the book is being released on the 4th of October.
It's coming
digitally
out.
So it's coming out in like a couple days here. So we might have to read that one, potentially take a look at that maybe down the line and see how that plays into it. But
I smell a giveaway.
I smell a giveaway. Yeah, actually, that's not a bad idea. But they brought her in here. She witnesses essentially the death of her parents.
Right.
I found that to be almost heartbreaking. But what I didn't quite catch, or I didn't quite, I don't know if I liked or not, but I thought it was really interesting how she reacted to that. There were a couple points. There was one point where she kind of walked up and held Amy's hand at the very last second when Amy calls her over. And Amy, you know, when Amy's staring at the angel and calls over River and says, you take care of him. Essentially, that's the first and only time, I think, or maybe definitely this season, that we've seen that motherly aspect, that motherly relationship of River and Amy.
Absolutely.
And that's the point to me where I think Amy became older and more mature than River at that point. She became her mom, you know. She guided her, told her what to do, and I think that's why River was calmer towards the end of that, you know, towards the end of the episode. But really fantastic interaction between the two of them. And then the Amy and Rory thing. I mean, we saw at the very beginning of the season they were kind of almost on the outs, right? To see their you brought it up earlier, love conquers all, and something that the doctor doesn't quite understand yet. He gets glimpses of it, but
I feel like he forgets.
Yeah. And so to see how often she went to, I guess, rescue Rory this episode. Obviously, she leapt off the building with him, right? That's huge. You know, how many people would do that with their significant others?
Suicide pact.
Exactly. I mean, it's Romeo and Juliet, right? They were definitely that Romeo and Juliet, at least that feeling where they would do things together. And then, obviously, at the very end of the episode where she takes, essentially, you know, confines yourself 50 years into the past. That was fantastic. Perfect timing, by the way.
Yeah, sorry. I'll try to be more. I guess we could edit this chunk out. But,
that's all right. We'll continue. This is happening live. It's happening live.
I will do my best to try to figure out and see that coming and avoid and nonsensical right. background noise like that.
The other thing that I really, again, kind of feeding off this doctor's emotional, the doctor's inability to tap into emotion or to understand emotion. There's the point where he kind of leaves River to either break her wrist or break the angel's wrist. Well, River breaks her own wrist, and then he sees it. He's upset that she broke her wrist, and his initial instinct is to heal her. He tries to heal her. And she freaks out on him and says, "You just don't understand the reasoning behind why people do things for love." She did it for he. I think he doesn't quite catch on that she did it for love. That the way she broke her own hand because she loved the doctor. She wanted to kind of continue this journey with them instead of the consequences of breaking the angel's wrist. But and the doctor just never quite comprehends the reasoning behind why humans do things. And again, we've seen it all season, but I think this episode, especially the whole idea of love and emotion, he never quite understands it. Doesn't understand why Amy can't come with him. Doesn't understand why River, broke her wrist and didn't want his help. And so he, at one point, he gave up on Rory in the apartment and said, "I'm sorry, Rory. This you're gonna die. There's nothing we can do. Let's go, Amy. Let's go, River. See ya." You know, it was almost to the point where he didn't quite understand that kind of level of human emotion. And I found that to be really fascinating about the doctor. It almost made him like an android or almost robotic, very foreign.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's kind of all over the place. They flirt with this understanding of humanity that he has, sure. And then they.
Yeah.
They kind of toss it aside, or maybe it's just easily forgotten. I mean, he's old as dirt, and he's got a lot on his mind.
Yeah, that's true. 900 years old, I think.
Oh, he's over that now. This that's after true. Last season, he's 1100 and something.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, it's yes. It's definitely, and this is just a quick thing I want to touch on because you mentioned the
Sure,
broken wrist and the
sure.
suicide pact. This is definitely, and I think we talked about this before, the darkest I feel Who has gotten in a long time, if not ever, for a show that people real, continually be like, well, it's a children's show, but adults can understand it. There was some heavy, heavy stuff this week. There was stuff where, people in the present saw themselves from the past die right in front of their eyes. Happened with Rory, happened with the throwaway detective guy. And we had Rory and Amy jumping off the bridge to erase, or I'm sorry, the roof to erase, the angels and the paradox, and if they're going to die, they're going to die together, and the doctor being furious and making sure that River breaks her wrist, or no, I'm sorry, he wanted her to get out of the wrist breaking, and she does it anyway and hides it, and there were a lot of powerful themes here, and some of them were very dark. In spite of the we did live happily ever after, but not with you, heartbreaker of an ending. So I thought that was very interesting. And like you said, it ties into, well, that doesn't, but the episode overall kind of really goes into these kind of foreign understandings with the doctor. And yeah, I guess I was kind of, I didn't get the initial takeaways from that river scene. I wasn't sure why, she said, "You embarrassed me," and stormed off. But Amy really brought it together when she said, "You stick to the science stuff." And River said, "Don't ever let him see you get old. This is what happens when you fall in love with an ageless god who insists on having the face of a 12-year-old," which I thought was a great line. Great line. And we've seen it time and again. I mean, way, way back when Tennant visited with Sarah Jane, he's like, "This is what happens. I age, you age, I don't. Like, I can't be with you forever, and it's the curse of the Time Lords," right? And I thought it was a very nice touch for Moffat to kind of bring that back, and because it's always going to be part of this character. The doctor sees Amy starting to get lines around her eyes because they've been traveling together for 10 years of Amy's time, and he's like, "Something's different. I don't like it." And she's like, "Well, I have reading glasses now." And he said, "Oh, you got lines around your eyes." And then he kind of realizes what he says, but actually at the same time doesn't care. And obviously, whatever adventures have happened with River, she's been, chasing after him with this lovelorn kind of look, and she basically says that it hurts to be around him, and because he says, "Yeah, hey, the wrist, that must really hurt." She's like, "Yeah, the wrist hurts too." And so it just he's a tough guy to be around. He really is for these women, these companions, these people who love him, not even always romantically, but just in general, because he's going to live on indefinitely, and they're not. And sooner or later, everybody gets left behind.
I totally agree. To kind of touch on some of the other aspects of this episode, I found it really interesting that it's almost a year to the day that the God Complex came out, and the God Complex was set in an apartment building with a bunch of different rooms, and the only person who didn't really have a room was Rory. Well, guess what? Now he had a room in this episode, an apartment room. So it was really kind of interesting. But let's talk a little bit about the angels. Did we always know that the angels could send people back in time, or was that kind of created for this episode?
No. So that's what made them so terrifying in the first place. When they were first introduced back in Blink, season three of New Who, the Doctor and Martha get sent back in time, I think to the 60s or 70s, and they leave clues for Sally Sparrow to go and find all these different DVDs and stuff. And then they actually create their own loop, because she eventually writes the script and creates all the documents that she gives him when she meets him, but he hadn't met her yet. And then they wind up going back in time using Sally Sparrow, or getting sent back in time by the angels using Sally Sparrow's notes and blah, 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 blah. So yes, to answer your question, the angels have always been these creatures that have been around since probably the dawn of the universe, who are just these super fast beings that turn to stone when you look at them. And the way they feed is off of time energy. They feed off of the energy that they get when people are sent out of time and then age and die in the present. That's how they've always worked. And then when we met them in the Byzantium crash, the Byzantium, time of angels, flesh and stone, whatever it was, Moffat had added these layers to the characters. And an image of an angel becomes an angel, and they were trapped in Amy's eye and all this other stuff, which some people had mixed reactions to. Some people thought they were a little less scary that way. Some people thought they were way scarier that way, because then you could be anywhere. And now this episode seemed to have brought them back to the roots, more or less. I'm hearing a lot of people feel that they don't find them as terrifying as they had in the original episode and even in the last one.
You know, I think that's probably because we've seen them so many times now.
But that's exactly right. Yeah. Is it an issue of how they were used here, or is it an issue of, you know, less is more, and now this is the third adventure with them. We know what we're getting, and you know what to expect. I'm torn on it. On the one hand, I like the new layers. I liked the cherubs, the little baby angels. I thought that was a nice twist.
The giant angel.
The what?
The giant angel, the Statue of Liberty.
Well, we'll get back to that. But I thought it was a nice touch. I thought they were creepy as hell. I thought that the little giggles that they let off were really creepy. I thought the fact that they blew out Rory's match was just masterwork.
That scene with that match coming up, you know, and then just seeing that cherub with its lips puckered blowing in the air was just fantastic.
Right. I don't dislike how they were used in this episode as much as other people, but I can also see, you know, I can see the argument, and I can see the argument that they've lost some of their menace and whatever. I mean, the throwaway mobster boss guy had one locked up, you know, and it was supposedly screaming for help. He was keeping angels at bay by having locks on his door, which makes no sense because these things are super powerful. We've seen them rip, you know, doors off of ships and everything. So, the damn Statue of Liberty thing, Dolly. I can't. You know what I'm going to say.
Let's get into that. Because I knew you kind of brought this up on Twitter yesterday.
Because I feel like if we go into that, we're going to start to snowball into the bad of the episode.
Sure.
So I just want to say one more time, I just want to reiterate how fantastic I found the performances to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, Matt Smith, like when he reads the episode titles and he sees that, you know, once you've read about your future, it's locked, which is kind of time and wimey Moffat stuff. Which
the chapter titles, yeah.
Right, but he read the chapter titles in the book, and then he thought he was fine, and then, you know, he saw the last chapter was Amy's final farewell or Amelia's farewell or whatever, and he lost it. Like, he got so mad, he was throwing the book, like, he was screaming at River that she had to get out without breaking her wrist. You know, like his range is fantastic, and then at the end when we had this roller coaster of, oh God, they just killed themselves. No, wait, they're all back. He's happy. He saved them. He knows that, like, everything's fine. And then he's begging Amy not to go.
Oh,
and like Rory's already gone, and that kind of sucks because he got shafted on goodbye, but whatever. But so Rory's gone. Amy's clearly going to go after him. The doctor can't do anything to stop her, but he's begging anyway. It was masterwork. Mm-hmm. It was just brilliant acting. It sold the episode. It 110% sold the episode. And, you know, credit to Amy and Rory or Karen and Arthur for being able to jump all over the place from serious to comedic or comedic to serious to lighthearted to heavy to goodbye. No, we're okay. We're happy. Now we're not. Like, just all brilliant. And, you know, minor props to Alex Kingston. But once again, I felt River didn't really have too much to do aside from being there and servicing the plot. But, you know, she's always, well, she's fun to be around. I thought that stuff was great. And I think the acting really, elevates the episode higher than, you know.
I agree. It was definitely a highly emotional episode. And if you watched this episode and didn't at least let your eyes water up a little bit, you're a monster. I found it. I got a hole in my heart right now for Amy and Rory, especially for Rory, because like you mentioned, he didn't get a proper goodbye. More so to the fact that he has been, in my opinion, one of the greatest characters heroically in the series since I began watching. The dude waited for his wife for 2,000 years. I mean, that's nuts. You know, he did everything he could to try to get there, to marry her, to rescue her. He blossomed from this kind of geeky dude to this heroic and manly individual that his popularity has absolutely exploded in not only in the UK but around the world because of Doctor Who. But he became this character that was. I looked forward to his scenes more than anybody else this season, as time went on, because I felt like he really brought this level of naivete you know, to the scene where he knew bad things were happening, but he still kind of he was always hopeful and always brought that little level of geekiness to it where he didn't really want to believe what he was seeing, even though he did believe it.
Right.
I mean, there was that episode, that scene last week where his, you know, he and his father are flying the.
Oh, Brian.
And that's another thing. Oh man, what?
Oh.
What does the doctor now have to tell Brian after after that episode last week? What, you know, he has to tell, you know, Rory's dad the news that, hey, bud, your kid's gone. He is dead as of right now. He has passed on. And I mean, that's just got to be heartbreaking. And I think that is what gets me more than the actual events of this episode is, you know, how is Rory and Amy's families, how are they going to react to their children disappearing, right? I mean, Amy reacted to River in the way that she could. She became a mom. That was the first time Amy actually felt like a mom to me.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of a really just amazing, touching scene. And then how is Brian going to react? What does Doctor have to do? We don't see Amy and Rory live out those years. I mean, what kind of trials and tribulations do they go through in that time frame? Do they pass on at the same time? Are, you know, does Amy or Rory, one of them, live on without the other one? It's really kind of an interesting take. I think that is what that hole is never going to be filled for these characters now, because of all that stuff was kind of left out in the open. Thankfully, I don't actually want resolution on all these. I want to kind of know that there's always going to be something out there that the doctor can't answer. And, you know, we touched on it a lot this season, but the doctor can't fix everything. He couldn't fix Amy and Rory passing this episode. The future was set.
Yeah.
And it was just, it tugged on your heartstrings, you know, the entire episode, knowing after the doctor read the chapter titles and lost it, like you were mentioning. I mean, at that point, you knew something, you knew it was going downhill. You knew it was going downhill in a bad way. And we were powerless. And we were as powerless as the doctor. Or actually, let me rephrase it. The doctor was finally as powerless as us,
yeah,
the viewers, to this situation happening. And yeah. I found that to be so strong, such a powerful theme to this episode, that it really kept it. I mean, regardless of some of the weird, you know, the detective and the Mr. Grail and some of the, you know, some of the stuff that went on, the Statue of Liberty, I think that theme was really amazing to me. The Doctor was a bit player in this episode.
Yeah, well, yeah. And
for, you know, in a way.
No, you're right. And it's like we talked about, this has been, this season feels like it's just been a build up to this. You know, everything has been building to this moment. So yeah, it's been all about the pawns, and this is our goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
See, I just want to touch on a couple other things. Sure. I really liked before we can go. We'll go negative. I thought that the smiling angel was a nice creepy touch.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen that before. That was awesome. In an episode where people had enough, you know, ammo to say the angels are weak, I thought that was a very nice touch. Let me consult my notes here. I thought that the Dr. River flirting thing was like that whole situation was nice. Mm-hmm. It felt like they were actually finally people who had spent a lot of time together, yeah, and pseudo married or whatever they were. I thought it was a cheesy touch, but I thought it was nice when, you know, the doctor's like, it would take power, like an unimaginable amount of power to create or to break this paradox or whatever. And we don't have that. And then Amy grabs Rory's hand and he's like, yeah, well, yes, you do. You got us. Basically saying love is still the most powerful thing in the universe. You know, and the cheesy romantic side, mm-hmm, of me enjoyed that a little bit. Rory had an awesome line where he was on the roof and Amy's like, you think you're just going to come back to life? And he's like, when don't I? So I thought that was a nice nod, yeah, to the fans, yeah, who have been pointing out that Rory's died more times than the doctor's regenerated. So that was a really nice touch. You know, I thought it was very poetic, you know, their jump off of the roof together. And it kind of touches on what people have been saying. Like, this guy waited 2,000 years and he's gone, you know, across the universe. He blew up Cybermen. He did all this stuff for her. What is she like? What has she done except for the fact that she's accepted him and she chose him over the doctor? And now you've got somebody who's willing to jump. Like, she jumped with him. She jumped to her death off of a multi-story, you know, building. And it was, you know, I thought that was a very, very, very nice touch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and I liked that they're still layering, like, they're adding layers to the what is now pretty obviously the season's major theme of, you know, Doctor Who. Unfortunately, like you had mentioned offline, a decent amount of our theories are now shot to crap.
Oh yeah, I'm kind
of River and the Doctor confirmed that he is the one erasing all of his mentions from history. So goodbye silence, goodbye elaborate conspiracy plot. Hello, Doctor doing all the work himself.
Goodbye, Rory being the master.
Oh, or, thank Christ.
Or Amy being the master and Rory being a Time Lord. Yeah, my heart was broken for that.
I love it to death, but there's just it's so funny hearing that every week. I actually hope that Steven still brings that up just as a joke, at this point. But yes, goodbye all that. Goodbye all those theories. Mm-hmm. But hello, you know, Moffat's clearly keeping the arc going. He's clearly building to something. And you know me, I'm a bigger fan of that. I'm terrified of it because he bumbles all of this stuff so hard all the time. But I'm glad to see that it's going somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a nice plot. And then the ending, like I can't gush enough about the last 10 minutes of this episode,
which is
funny because it's the direct opposite of last week, right?
Yeah.
Where the last 10 minutes had me just so furious. but as it's, you know, it's just nice to see Amy has grown up. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a character who was obsessed with this doctor who ran away on her wedding night, who wants, you know, him and all this stuff. And this whole season has, you know, there were a lot of hints about choosing a lifestyle, going with the doctor, not going with the doctor. And then she's finally forced to choose once and for all, and she chooses Rory. She chooses Rory. She lets go. And when she says, you know, she even says goodbye, Raggedy Man, and then whoosh, gone, like sent back through time, which crushes the doctor, but clearly shows us Amy's ready. She's ready to let go. She's ready to live her life with Rory and stop traveling with Doctor, you know, the Doctor throughout the universe and everything. And I just thought it was a very nice final moment with her to kind of really bring her full circle and really show her growth as a character. And like you said, you know, it's a testament to this episode and the actors where, you know, it felt like Amy and River had a very nice moment and actually were related and actually, you know, mother daughter.
Yeah.
And it's also to just take a slightly more negative look at that. It's also a reminder of something that I talked a lot about at the end of last year and how poorly River as a character was handled.
Yes.
And, you know, how she had all this potential and then it was bumbled and then Amy was written weirdly and never seemed to care about the fact that her daughter was gone. All this crazy shit.
Mm-hmm.
And here it was nice. It was simple. It was to the point. And that's – it's a reminder of how River should have been and could have been handled. But it was also a nice ending, you know? And it's also interesting, and we'll get into the timey-wimey stuff in a second here, but – you know, she'll obviously be able to get a little more of a goodbye, but it was also a nice touch that, like we've talked about a little bit earlier this episode, this doctor's so out of touch, he doesn't even realize until they're gone and he's sitting in the TARDIS that they were her parents. She's like, River, you know, I'm sorry, they were your parents or whatever. And she seemed to take it in stride, and probably because she knows she has to, you know, give her the book. But yeah, it's there was just so much going on in those last 10 minutes. It just
that was amazing. Boom, phenomenal, boom, boom, boom.
Phenomenal. And like you said, if you weren't, you must really hate the puns or the writing or about this show if you weren't genuinely touched and sad about how this all went down.
Yeah.
So segue.
I think there were a few things. Both you and I agree that there are a few things that were kind of out of place in this episode. Maybe not of the highest quality.
I think I'd get more worked up if I wasn't still so broken.
Yeah. Now, there's one thing that you didn't like. You found a pretty huge plot hole in this. Either you found it, or I think I actually heard folks talking about it on Twitter yesterday.
Well, there's potentially a couple, so I'm curious which one you want to open with.
Well, I'm going to start with this one, which is the giant angel.
The giant Statue of Liberty angel. Bleep it in the bleep and bleep that ever bleeped is bleep, all right?
I don't think it was you that mentioned it, but I do remember somebody mentioning it, I think last night, who's not going to see this giant creation walking through New York, this giant angel, even stopping for a moment, who's not going to see this? So, I thought that was kind of an interesting thing.
Oh, it was so, like...
Forced.
I need to find my words. So somebody had pointed out that it's kind of a nice nod, if you want to interpret it as a nice nod to fans who have said for years that, oh man, the Statue of Liberty is probably a giant weeping angel. And you know what? On paper, kind of brilliant.
Yeah.
But do you know why it's brilliant? Because the thing can't move.
Yes.
There's just it. Yes. It cannot move. There, at any given point, somebody's looking at that thing, and even if they're not, they would notice when it went from Liberty Island to, you know, Midtown or wherever this episode took place in Manhattan. Like, there's just no way. It just doesn't work. So yes, it's a great visual. Yes, it's really scary. Also, apparently, they were on a building as tall as the Statue of Liberty, but that's fine. Whatever. But the like, this isn't even like some of the other like Who plotholes where you have to really turn your brain on. This is the second you look at it, it falls apart.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Kind
There's
of like an angel.
Yeah. And some people were like, yeah, but if you notice, there's visual imagery, and you know, whatever an angel becomes, or an image of an angel, becomes an angel. But that still doesn't make any sense.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. I honestly, I don't even know how else to go into it, Dolly. It's so, it's such a reach, even for this show, that I don't know what else to say. And so, well, you know what it is? It's a giant Cyberman on Christmas.
It totally is. Well, thankfully they had the baby, the cherubs, offset it. Which the cherubs, I think, now are even more terrifying than the regular angels. The angels are some of my, if not my favorite, maybe one of my favorite kind of antagonists the episode or in the series. To see them expanded upon this episode was great. That the Statue of Liberty was out there, really out there, could have been handled very differently. Unfortunately, yeah, totally got flubbed, in our opinion. But you actually had other things that you wanted to, that you had issues with, some timey-wimey stuff.
Yeah, so the statue is what it is. I mean, it's a nice nod I feel like it could be a nice nod to fans and long-term, you know, service, but overall, just, blech, I just didn't, it doesn't hold up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what else? You know, and this is something that is roaring across the internet right now, and people are just can't figure it out. Why can't the Doctor visit Abby and Rory? Now, right. I'm not saying change the future, because as we learned in this episode, which, you know, is a nice little plot thing, all of a sudden, once you read your future, it's done. Like, once you know it's going to happen, apparently it's fixed. Now, I don't necessarily know if I buy that, because it kind of flies in the face. It's a huge asterisk of the whole time can be rewritten thing, because – but at the same time, apparently, if you know what's going to happen, it's locked in.
Mm-hmm.
And that sucks. I mean, I guess I kind of get it, and I guess that's why, you know, River can't let Doctor ever read spoilers of his own future ever since she showed up and gave him her diary and stuff. But, I mean, that's it. These are fixed time points now. Or not even points. They're entire fixed timelines.
Right.
Like – and some people are like, well, okay, so he knows when – or he has a rough idea of when Amy and Rory get sent back in time. Why can't he – okay, he can't bounce back to 1938 New York, because it'll rip New York off the planet and it'll create another paradox. And they got lucky with their first paradox. That's fine. Okay, whatever. Why can't he go to 1940 New Jersey?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't he go to 1969 and they can visit and whatever? Why can't he – you know, like why is it that this timeline is so locked that – for the next 40 or 50 years of the pond's existence, he can't drop in and say hello? Why is it that he can never see them again?
You know, maybe – and again, this is totally left up to interpretation. Maybe there's still the opportunity. Maybe the reason that Moffat kind of left them out there at that point was to say, hey, you know, they're still alive. They're not dead. Maybe the Doctor will still have a chance in that, you know, 50th anniversary episode or whatever. Maybe there is still a chance that Amy and Rory will come back for a one-off. But that stuff can only happen if the TARDIS takes him there, right? He doesn't really always program the TARDIS to go to specific times. He does, you know, on occasion, but he only tends to go there if someone needs him, if time needs him. And Amy and Rory don't need him, right? They're done. They're done with the Doctor. They were his family, but they're no longer in need of having him to, you know, as the glue to hold them together. So if there's no need for him, there's no need for the Doctor to show up in that time frame again.
Well, yeah, but that's a stretch, because you're taking need, you know, and if that was the case, there was no need for him to show up at any given time after he dropped them off last season.
Sure, sure.
He bought them a house. He sent them on their way to live a happy life.
but he couldn't live without them, or he didn't want to live without them and travel without them, so he went back. Now, what this episode establishes is that they are time locked, you know, forever. Mm-hmm. Their mm-hmm. timelines are fixed points that he can't even drop in on.
Mm-hmm.
And it just there are some theories as to why, but it's a stretch. And in a second, I'll tie into what I feel like is unfortunately a recurring problem with the Moffat stuff. But it just feels like it was just thrown in, you know, like there wasn't a proper way to write them off without, you know, where they could still live, but he wouldn't be around. So they added this weird layer of timey-wimey stuff and rules. And I don't know. It feels like it's something that for a guy who's taken the TARDIS to so many different places whenever the plot required it, this is just like it would be an inconvenience, but now suddenly he's locked out forever and he can never see his best friends again.
Right.
And it's just – I just felt it's a stretch. And, you know, I'm not going to go as far as some people in saying that, you know, it's a crap ending and it's not as good as Rory and Amy deserve and all this other stuff. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's really cool that they got zapped back. And if you tell me that they can't ever leave because of it being a fixed event, that's fine. I just don't get why it breaks. I mean, I get why it breaks the Doctor. I just don't get – it doesn't break down as to why he can't go back. Now, one thing I have read, if you'll indulge me, is that because it's all fixed events where mm-hmm. Rory – basically, as soon as Rory read the tombstone, it became simultaneous. Like, that has to happen now. Mm-hmm. Like, he has to be buried there. And some people are like, well, why isn't it just like a Tesselect where he can just hire somebody to write on that tombstone and then the whole universe thinks he's dead? Well, it's not the same because that was a predetermined event, but this is actually an event that has to happen the way it goes down because their future selves experienced pretty much the exact same moment their past selves started. So there's that, and the fact that everybody else interacted with that timeline as well, and because of that timeline happening, they all grew – well, those two grew old and died without the Doctor ever visiting them because their names appeared on the tombstone as he saw it happen. So he knew that was already done, and supposedly that's why he's time locked out of it. Like, since they grew old and died knowing they never saw him again, he can now never see them again. Otherwise, it creates a paradox, and it'll rip the universe apart and all those mm-hmm. other stuff. Mm-hmm. So, this is just one of many different ways of people are trying to rationalize this, and I give them a lot of credit because it really is a stretch. It's tough because, as you know me, I want all these – I want point A and B to always fit together even if you have to go, you know, from B to Z to get there, you know? And it's just a stretch. Even for a show like this, it's a bit of a stretch. But as I – you know, and this is a nice segue to the bigger problem is it – I feel like, once again, this episode would have been served as a two-parter, and I feel like Steven would agree with me if he was here on this one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a recurring theme of this season where – you know, even if you didn't need entire two-part episodes, these episodes could have used some space to breathe.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even if it was just another 10, 15 minutes in some cases, these episodes could have used some room to breathe. And I think this one is no exception to that. In fact, I think this one would have been great as a two-part finale.
You know, so one thing I actually found really interesting about that was way back in the God Complex, I'm bringing up the God Complex because I actually think it's very linked to this episode in a way, either thematically or storyline wise. So there's a point in the God Complex, the very end, where Amy says, "You can't just drop me off at my house and say goodbye like we shared a cab." Doctor says, "What's the alternative? Me standing over your grave?"
Right.
A lot of foreshadowing there. I really think that there's a tie into that episode leads right into this episode. Of course, there wasn't the whole time the angels thing that back then it was like a minotaur or something, a beast, I think it was what it was called. But you know, it's interesting. I want to say interesting again. It does bother me as well in that question of why can't he see them again. But I'm not as bothered as others. I accept it. It would be almost like a paradox that that's why the Doctor wouldn't be able to go back and visit them, because maybe that creates some sort of paradox. But I'm fine with it. I'm, you know, it doesn't. I don't have an issue with it. I guess.
I like the sense of finality. I agree with you there. I just wish it had been handled a little better.
Yeah, maybe there was something some reason that he couldn't go back. Maybe if they just had a one sentence that said it. But you know, I think, you know, I'm fine with it. I can insinuate why in the back of my head. I can, you know, there's all these ideas floating that it would create another paradox. It would, you know, Amy and Rory would cease to exist or whatever. But
well, it's something I definitely, you know, like I said, it doesn't ruin the episode for me at all. Nor does it undermine the last 2 years of relationship building with Amy and Rory. You know, there's some people out there that are just instantly willing to just write everything off and be super mad. I don't think that's the case. Mm-hmm. I think it's something to noodle on a little more. I'm interested to see what other people come up with.
And I guess that's why I think more so now that this episode is the earliest of this season in the Doctor's life, and then what we saw leading up to this was the kind of what takes place after, right? And so in this episode, the doctor knows, hey, I can't go back and see Amy and Rory after they've, after they've gone back in time. I can go visit them when they're before this moment in their time, right?
Right. Back in their timeline. Yeah, yeah.
I can go back in their timeline up to this point. So I think that's probably why he went nuts with them that last episode of the Cubes and wanted to move in and wanted to hang out and travel with them as much as possible and be around them as much as possible because of what happened after this episode. And so
sure.
That's why I guess that's why I don't have as much of an issue with that finality. But
I like the finality. I do. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, it serves a purpose for the Doctor losing these people he can never see again. And I do like that. I wish I'm torn on the very end. Like, I like the idea of him going back and comforting little Amelia as mm-hmm. kind of a tribute to what happens to Amy. But I do, you know, and
we'll which also again ties into the God complex, because there's the whole illusion and allusion there to the young Amy.
Right.
And the whole idea of faith in the Doctor.
But at the same time, there's a part of me that agrees with, and we'll get into this when we do reader feedback in a few minutes here, listener feedback, readers, where I think it really could have served the story, you know, maybe even more compellingly with a Doctor who mm-hmm. we see not as happy and jovial and jumping around the TARDIS mm-hmm. at the end when he's going back to visit little Amelia, but somebody who's broken, just completely sad and broken because of his utter failure to protect his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And this is somebody, like you said, who has had his most basic of powers taken away completely by, you know, a rogue enemy that he had thought defeated. And I can definitely see an argument. In fact, I may even, you know, and this might change, but, you know, as of today, I might even be in the argument where the episode could have used a bit of a darker, sadder ending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like when Tennant lost Rose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was going to be flying around by himself. And then, of course, he was super sad. And then they had that little segue into the Donna holiday special. But you know, he threw his jacket on the TARDIS and he was really bummed out, you know? Or you know what? Even a more poignant point would be when Donna lost her memory and
right,
the Doctor was ready to go out on his own. He was standing in the rain and then he went in the TARDIS and he was utterly and completely devastated. And maybe it was a choice to send them off, and maybe Moffat wanted to avoid kind of the super, super sadness. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why he peeked at the graveyard, but I don't know. I just feel like, had we gotten a sense that the Doctor was truly, truly devastated, then it would be even better tie-in to the beginning of this season when we see him go crazy and let the bad guy die in dinosaurs and mm-hmm. and point the gun in a town called Mercy and all of that. But you know, it is what it is, and this is what we're left with. And while maybe not ideal, it definitely isn't as terrible as some people make it out to be. But what I do think is a bigger problem is these Moffat stories and these arcs and these centric stories where, you know, it just seems like he's focusing on plot devices instead of using mm-hmm, plot devices mm-hmm. to move his story along, you know? And then these characters feel rushed, explanations are off the cuff, they don't always make sense. There are potholes that you could drive a TARDIS through. it's unfortunate, but, you know, we're seeing it as much now as we have in the past year or two. We saw it with the River stuff, we saw it with the Silence. We've seen it, you know, with the Amy, you know, with the Pons goodbye. And
And yeah, I mean, you can go back as far as the Pandorica and everything before then, and it's just kind of a bummer. Like, I don't hate Moffat. I don't want his blood. I don't think there's, you know, there's actually, believe it or not, there's actually some conspiracies online where people think that this guy, you know, he's out to just get Who canceled. Like, you know, crazy internet people. And mm-hmm. and there's just this rage against him that he has to go and all that. And I don't feel any of that. I just feel like we were so excited when he took over mm-hmm. because he had written and created these
some of our favorite episodes and characters.
Amazing yeah. episodes of television and amazing episodes of Who. And I don't know. I just as a fan, you know, here we are in the middle of season 7 waiting for Christmas. I just don't think he's lived up to what I thought he was going to be. And mm-hmm. And it's entirely possible now we'll have a new companion. Maybe it'll breathe fresh life into the show. Maybe the creative juices will be flowing in a different way. You know, maybe all this build up to the anniversaries next year, maybe it'll all come together in a way I'm not expecting. I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt, but right now it's just not as great as it should be. It's still really good, and we're still getting these small moments of fantastic Who, but I feel like that's more of a testament to the characters themselves and the actors playing these characters than it is to the people running the show, you know? And I feel like we should be getting, you know, more episodes than two or three a season that are just, you know, mind-blowing. Like last year, right, when we had you know, the Doctor's Wife, or the year before that, we had the Van Gogh episode, stuff like that. And we can go more into this as we look back at the season. I just feel that this episode, while we'll remember it for the very end and the goodbye to the Ponds, I don't think will hold up over time like Blink does or, you know, Silence in the Library, whatever else Moffat was responsible for. So,
well, let's I think this is a good point where we kind of give our ratings for this episode out of let's say out of Giant Angels.
Well, do you want to do ratings first, or do you want to see if people agree with us or get some of that listener feedback?
Let's move on. Let's do the feedback and then we'll do our ratings. I think it's a good
point. See if those tie in, and then we'll give our own personal.
That might change our ratings for all we know.
I wouldn't count on that, Dolly, but fair enough. Would you like to go first?
Yeah. Well, I will go first. This one is a good buddy to the show listener, Keith Andrew. This is a bit of a lengthy one. He's kind of sent me a nice long email.
Well, we don't have to read verbatim. Just pick out the juicy.
Well, I'm actually going to try to read through as much as I can and as fast as I can. But there are he does hit on quite a few really good things here. He says, at the basic level, so what we have here is a rare occasion of Moffat being a little too clever for his own good. And I think you actually mentioned this kind of a few times about the episode. So at the very basic level, Angels Takes Manhattan does not work, at least for an episode where two characters are written out for good. Again, kind of tying into that, how do we actually say goodbye?
Sure.
Moffat's attempted to use a monster whose main power is sending people back in time to get rid of Amy and Rory. The problem is, the Doctor has a TARDIS kind of weapon that makes sending people back in time null and void. So again, that whole idea of why can't he go back in time?
Yep.
And Keith actually says some really good points about how the Angels worked in Blink, because the Doctor really wasn't in it. They worked in the time of Angels, Flesh and Stone, because they were actually killing people and breaking their necks at that point. But here, the idea was that them just sending them back in time. To Keith, it just wasn't quite as frightening. And so he kind of focuses on the point that, you know, the whole episode is kind of filled with a bunch of convoluted ideas designed to knock the TARDIS out of action. Because we rarely see any use of the TARDIS in this, except for it not being able to get into. Get into the past, and he really liked the rooms the people live their lives in. Thought that was actually really creepy and nicely done. I agree, and that's why I love the God complex and why I love kind of the whole idea of the apartments in this. And he also really liked the idea of the whole thing being written down into a book. I guess the way he sums it up is Moffat had time to rewrite the ending to the Angels Take Manhattan 20 times. That to him suggests that something fundamentally wasn't quite working. And this is, I think that's actually been mentioned on the web, that Moffat kept rewriting the ending. And so he shouldn't have just run this standard one-off episode rather than use a story littered with plot holes to say goodbye to the best assistance the show has had since it returned. And that, I keep saying that kindly, that basically depressed him more than anything else was how the episode could have gone if it had potentially been a two-parter or so on. So, you know, he's agreeing with your sentiments about how kind of the finale was some of the plot holes, I guess, that were littered in that last 10 minutes or so of the episode. But it seemed like he just didn't quite like it as much as you or I did.
Yeah, so, no, I mean, that's...
He raised some great points.
This is going to be some divisive stuff. Yeah. It really is. I think we're going to be debating this one for a long time. It wouldn't surprise me if I even flip-flop on it, you know? The more I think about it, I might grow to love it. I might grow to like it a lot less. It's interesting he brought up the rooms that the angels were... And I feel like we kind of overlooked this, but why do they need that? Like, it's a cool concept in theory, but they're in a city that like is brimming with, like, what's the population of New York? Even in the 30s, it had to be what, 3 or 4 million people?
Yeah.
And there's so many possible, like, there's just so many victims there that it's just kind of strange to think that they had to farm out and do this kind of battery, you know, like this farm basically where they can send people in over and over again. And it's interesting. So these people are living the rest of their lives. As the doctor said, Rory was going to spend the rest of his life in one room. How does that work exactly? And this is like another one of these plot holes that if you don't think about it and just take it as a story device, it's really cool. But the second you start wondering how Rory's going to live to be 82 or 83 without food or water or who's feeding him and all this stuff, then it kind of gets a little janky. You know, are we looking at a situation where the angels have the power to keep people alive and feed on that temporal energy? Because we know in the past when they've sent people back in time, they've lived full lives and they feed off of the fact that they got old. How are these people getting old in this weird little angel farm? You know? And of course, I guess it's rendered moot when they, because of the paradox, it apparently has the ability to starve angels and deprive them of food and kill them. But it's very interesting. Like the motivation there is just the logistics don't really work out, you know?
You know what's interesting about this episode that we're going off a little bit of a tangent here, and I think maybe this is why a lot of people are finding it very divisive or divisive. Is that what? Yeah, divisive.
Yeah.
Is that Rose, Martha, Red? Sorry, totally blanked on her name right now.
Donna.
Wow. I'm sorry.
Arguably it's been the a long second day. Best companion.
Yeah, exactly. No, Rose, Martha, Donna. We don't see their death. We don't see their finality, right? We see their, we see them leave the doctor, and that's it. Those are almost happy endings that they've left the doctor. Here, Amy and Rory, who we've been with for 2.5 years, you know, it seems like even longer. We see their death. We see them die. I mean, we're standing on their graves.
Yeah.
And that's the first time that's happened with the doctor in so long, probably since, you know, the 80s, I guess, maybe even before then, who knows, or maybe ever. That, at least definitely in modern times, the first time we've actually seen the death of characters. Usually it's been left wide open, but in this case...
Right, we know how they end, basically. Yeah, yeah, like, so. We know where their story ends for good. Yeah. Like you said, not when they leave, but when they finally die.
What are some of the other thoughts that... you had quite a few people that sent messages in.
Yeah, so we have a couple more that we can read here, and I think they're very good. I'm pretty excited about these. Mm-hmm. So our friend Robert Hunter wrote in and said, you know, he might be in the minority, but he really likes Amy and Rory. He thinks they're great companions. He also really likes Matt Smith. He's not a fan of River Song because he feels like the Doctor's infatuation with her is more of Moffat's infatuation with the character that he created. And he's like, seriously, Yowza? Come on. So that'll give you basis for his opinions. He felt that maybe the episode was overhyped, but he thought it was only half done. The bit with the private eye in the beginning and the gangster collector guy was kind of throwaway. And he makes a good point that was completely throwaway. Those characters served to introduce the story or to get River and the Doctor in the same room and breaking wrists and stuff. And then that was it. They were gone. They have no impact. There's no consequence. Once again, window dressing, you know? Mm-hmm. So I agree with Robert on that. He likes the bitch with, you know, he liked the bits, excuse me.
The
with
bitch. Rory and Amy.
The bits, sorry, with Rory and Amy.
Yeah.
With their rooftop scene and their graveyard scene at the end.
Just amazing scenes.
Yeah. He liked their relationship. He always liked the relationship, even if it appeared that Amy was mean and that she cared really down. And like I said, that kind of ties back in how I felt about her overall character arc. And then he felt that the way that they left getting zapped back in time worked. They get to live out the rest of their lives together. And he likes that Moffat and Co. didn't kill one of them off and force the other one to live alone. But he was really confused if they got back to 19. This is exactly what we're talking about. This is what is a problem that's going to leave viewers really, you know, bothered. If they got zapped back to 1938, what's to stop the Doctor from going back and visiting them? Yeah, New York City is apparently messed up with time rifts or whatever, but they didn't have to stay there. I don't get why the Doctor couldn't pop back to, like, 1940, pick them up for a ride from New Jersey or Connecticut or something. And like I said, Dolly, this is something I'm hearing seeing a bit, and I felt the same thing afterwards. I was like, huh. So overall, Rob feels that, you know, it was a bittersweet mixed bag episode. He's sad the Pawns are gone, but he's looking forward to new stories, and he's hoping that he hopes that with the Pawns gone, there will be less River Song in the show's future.
Oh, I'm actually hoping for more River Song.
I think the potential for River is there as one-off stories, but like the Angels at this point, she should be used less than more, in my opinion. Everybody hates endings. Let's not say that.
There's no endings.
Our friend Brendan Fry from up in Canada said that it was a good way to move the series forward, yet allowed Amy and Rory to have a full life together. It ensures that they are not only happy, but the Doctor cannot go back and get them. At the same time, he feels that it was forced and that everything was done more to move the story forward than actually moving them off the show organically. Especially after last week's episode where it set up the fact Amy and Rory wanted to be with the Doctor more, it seemed like kind of an odd choice. And I can kind of get that. I mean, there was definitely a lot of foreshadowing, and I think we predicted last week, or maybe one of us, I don't remember, that with all the foreshadowing, there was going to be a bait and switch, and that Moffat wasn't really going to deliver the murder, death, kill stuff. And I guess that just that didn't sit right with Brendan. I don't have a problem with it, because like, you just knew Moffat was going to do something wonky. But I can, you know, I can totally relate to the fact that he does. He doesn't like it. You know, all the foreshadowing went in a completely different direction. He continues, the way it made the Angels truly menacing was a great tactic. Having them all over New York was a nice touch and showed how powerful they really were. It'll be interesting to see who they choose. Well, so Brendan is a little out of the loop. He said it'll be interesting to see who they choose as the next companion. He would not want to see River Song, do that, and that's fine. The episode goes deeper into how the Doctor relied on people to keep him sane and grounded in reality, which of course ties back to the theme that he should never travel alone. And we've seen time and again what happens when he travels alone, going back to Waters of Mars and Time Lord Victorious. And then the fact that the Doctor had very little ability to change the events of the episode, and leaving it to Amy and Rory was a nice touch. You know, it made clear once again that it was their story and their farewell rather than another story about just the Doctor. And then, minor note, how did no one notice the Statue of Liberty missing from the island? You would think it would be front page news.
Yes.
So, yeah, I feel like, you know, our two friends, our two listeners here made some points that you and I have brought up. And then I was going back and forth a little bit with one other listener, Lewis, who, you know, he wanted to know how we felt about the forward, you know, at the end with Amy doing it. He felt it was just added as a goodbye. He felt that a sadder and darker episode would have been there if the Doctor had been broken and lost, is what he would like to see. But he admits that he also has kind of a thing for revenge stories. So he wanted to see the Doctor just destroy the Angel instead of leaving it to go haunt a graveyard, I guess. He felt that, you know, Rory, it was kind of written all over the place throughout his tenure. From being kind of a bumbling guy to a badass, you know, last year with the Cybermen and everything, to being less of an idiot but still not as badass. And he felt that was a little bit of inconsistency with the writing, which I feel like I could kind of see that. I feel like they definitely did some stuff with Rory where they were trying to find the voice of the character. But I feel like it also kind of, you know, it straightened out by the middle of last year. And once Amy and Rory were back with the Doctor, I felt like he was pretty consistent from that point forward. I just thought it was, I thought it was funny when he just kept dying. It's Rory Resurrection.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I kept thinking he was the Master or a Doctor or something, or a Time Lord.
But, you and Steven and your Time Lord, you're so desperate for the Time Lords to come back. and he thought it was a little weird to, I don't think he really liked the end with him going to visit little Amelia. And then, of course, he was just, he was mad at Moffat because, like, his feelings, he said his feelings immediately went from sad because of the suicide pact to super happy because the paradox worked, back to sad because, oh God, Rory's dead, to, oh my God, no, to see the sacrifice of Amy for Rory. And then he's like, by the time the doctor read the foreword and went to visit little Amelia, it had zero effect on him because Moffat had already killed him. So, you know, a summary of how he felt about it. Because then we talked a little bit more about paradoxes and everything, and we tried to figure out together this whole, like, why the doctor didn't visit thing. And, yeah, I mean, we don't have to go back into that, but basically, I'm just trying to find his succinct. Yeah, but he liked it a lot, but, like, you know, like you and I had said, he liked the character stuff a lot, but, you know, when it came to the timey-wimey stuff and everything else, then with paradoxes and everything, he wasn't as big of a fan of that, so. And I think all this feedback and combined with our conversation, you know, he also felt the angels were wasted and that the ending was rushed. Yeah, so I think it kind of ties in with the fact that it's divisive for people, you know, and I honestly think that, and we'll talk more about this next week with the season.
Isn't that any time, you know, major characters get offed on a TV series, it becomes a kind of a divisive thing?
You know, it's possible. I've been tuned in now pretty hardcore since right around the time of maybe the middle of Martha's arc. So I was definitely in the mix for Donna, and I feel like people thought she got cheated in a way, but I don't think there was any disagreement in the overall impact of it. And I of course there were some people that hated her, but actually, you know what? Now that I'm saying this out loud, yeah, no, you're right. people will always argue about this.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think some characters, some companions have less, you know, arguments than others, but I think overall, yeah, you're right. And it provokes really strong feelings. We spend, you know, a year with Donna, a year with Martha. Although people, I think Martha is very underrated, but that's irrelevant. We spend 2.5 years with the Ponds. Of course, we get attached. Mm-hmm. We grow to love and care about these characters. Of course, we're gonna have really strong feelings about how they should be, you know, sent off. And you know, as Lewis even said, he's like, "How are more people not into this show?" which, of course, is probably just people he knows because, of course, you know, ratings are higher than ever, 10 million viewers a week or whatever.
Brilliant.
But it's a testament to the show. It's a testament to everything we talk about. And I'm not going to reiterate it again, but the characters and that, for the most part, with certain exceptions, River Song, are really handled well done when all is said and done. So
yeah, I'm we'll talk about this next week when we get Steven on, but we'll probably dive in a little bit more about this episode, but I'm still a fan of Rivers. She got me with the silence in the library. She absolutely had me with that that episode. I became a huge fan of hers with her debut and death. But I do have to say, do we have anybody else? Any other comments?
I am good. I've gone through ours. Yeah. Right. I mean, I know people will be hitting us up during the week, and we, of course, encourage that.
Feel free.
We want to hear more, and, you know, I'd like to, at this point, solicit now people's reactions for the whole season. I'd love to see how people feel about season 7 so far, and yeah, so.
Yeah, we will read that on the next episode. Nobody mentioned Winter Key. That's got to be some type of clue for
Does
something.
It?
I mean, Winter Key, why would – it's – in huge letters throughout the entire episode. I don't know.
Maybe it's a red herring. You split letters apart? Is it an anagram? Is that what it is?
I don't know. Well, key is QAY is KEY. It's pronounced key, but I don't know. We'll see if that actually leads to anything.
I don't know. But right now we've got the light bulbs. We've got Christmas. Mm-hmm. We've got eggs. You know, we've got these really weird hints that may or may not play out.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be interesting that. Whenever the next we know the Christmas episode. When does the rest of the season come back? Is it
we don't know. We've got no confirmation about 2013 as far as I know. We know we've got Christmas. We know we've got season 7-2, and we don't even know if we're going to have multiple 50th anniversary specials or one. Apparently they've the production people, the BBC, have gone on record saying specials plural. But as of right now, sir, we really don't know. We've got this final episode that aired yesterday, or, you know, whenever you people see it.
Definitely.
And Christmas, which, you know, we're 2.5 months out from now. Unfortunately, another 3 months. I'm sorry. 3.5 months out. Oh, that sucks.
Oh, I know.
And we'll see. Yeah, I mean,
it's 2.5 months. 2.5 months. October, November, and December. Well, almost 3 months, I guess. Not 3.5.
Yeah, 3 months. Yeah.
Well, regardless, it's going to be a fun ride, and we'll do a lot of fun things over the rest of this. In the meantime, we make.
Yeah, we've had some people ask if they're fans of our style, and they'd like to see us maybe do some of the earlier episodes with Eccleston or Tennant.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We have some ideas for that. Yeah, we've definitely got some time to figure that out. But, Dolly, more importantly, before we forget, rate the episode.
Let's rate the episode this week. Out of how many angels are we going to give this? I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 angels because it was just the emotion. The emotion got me, man.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
I think going with angels instead of suicide packs is a better choice. Well done. That was not one of my better ideas. 4 suicide packs, everybody. I agree. I feel that even with its shortcomings, they're not as bad as they have been in some other episodes. And you just can't beat those last 10 minutes. You really can't. Yeah. And the moments where the doctor gets mad at River, or
the book.
Romantic book, and River breaks, all this stuff. So yeah, I'm agree with you. The performances, the characterization, the goodbye, all of it gets way. I don't even have words. That's how great it was. So I'm gonna go with 4 out of 5 as well.
Excellent. With that, we're gonna wrap it up for this week. We're gonna have this wonderful young lad, Steven Strum, joining us next week for sure. We're gonna try to record these over the weekends because I am. We've got some scheduling conflicts during the week. So if anything, these are going to be coming sooner to you guys. So be happy about that. And
now that you've said it out loud, you won't hear from us again until 2013. Thanks.
2013. No. And we do a lot of – I'm actually really excited now. I'm full Doctor Who mode. I might have to play the really bad games just to get back into it. But we'll see where that goes.
Well, now that you've said it out loud, we know our own future. We have to do this every weekend.
Exactly. With that said, I'm Dolly DeMasi. You can find me on Twitter at CoolRats, KEWLRATS. Sean, where can we find you?
At Sean Norton, SHAUNNORTON.
You can find The Lonely TARDIS on Twitter at Lonely TARDIS, spelled just like how you would imagine. The website, LonelyTARDIS.com, will be up. I am more slowly working on it, just trying to get all the nuts and bolts put together. It's not going to be anything super fancy, but it should get the point across of the show. So be ready for that.
Maybe we should time that for the 50th anniversary.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. We'll get all the Lonely TARDISes together for one fantastic episode. With that said, everybody, please rate and review us on iTunes, and we'll see you next time on The Lonely TARDIS.
Have a great week, everybody. Thanks again.
See you guys.
Bye, 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 bye. Woo!